I was going to tell the kids when they were up here a little more, but we didn't have time, about my great-grandmother, Shrigley, who lived in that same house and was quite a character. She died in that house with the large family gathered around her. Obviously, I wasn't there, but my mother tells of this story. Grandma Shrigley she went barefoot most of the time around the house and outside as well. And she also had a pet pig named Patty, who spent a great deal of time inside the house following her around. And the family used to joke about that. And my grandfather wrote a poem about an Irishman who had a pet pig, Patty, and so on and so forth, and kind of making fun. And the whole family used to sing that. Anyway, I think the pig eventually found its way to the dinner table, if you catch my drift. So the story came to an end. Anyway, I just had to share that little anecdote. Time is a relative thing, but one thing about time is that it doesn't stand still. I have been part of this congregation for approximately 16 years. And I suspect that many of you do not know very much about me, nor do I know very much about many of you. But three things you need to know about me that are pertinent for this time that we're sharing together. The first is that I am ever so much aware of my own mortality. And I want, when my time comes, for a good death. I want a dignified death. I have seen with my own eyes much bad death, torturous death, what I would term gross, unnecessary suffering. Our beloved Irene Glass has written a beautiful piece about death, and she says, "Death is not impressed by much." Absolutely right. Death has seen it all. A millennia of human folly reeling by horrific passages, gentle ones, times when her touch has been a blessing, times when it has been a curse. I want death's touch to be a blessing. The second thing you need to know about me is really not about me, but about Carol, my beloved first wife of nearly 54 years, who traveled her entire journey with Alzheimer's within this congregation. Some of you remember her. And many of you were very, very good and caring to Carol and to me. And I will be ever thankful for that. Carol died in my arms with me holding her hand on January 1st, 2016 at 6:32 in the morning. Third, along the way, and not surprisingly, I became an active member of Final Exit Network and you have a little bit of information on Final Exit Network in your bulletin. Final Exit Network is a death with dignity organization. And I ended up, for reasons that are somewhat beyond my comprehension, but I was invited to join the Speakers Bureau, and I have made full-fledged hour-and-a-half presentations and some shorter ones in many churches in Maryland and Virginia and West Virginia and New York State and Connecticut and Pennsylvania and Connecticut. I joined FEN because of my extensive exposure to death in my years of ministry and my exposure to much bad death, and a recognition that many people, by and large, in our culture, deny the goodness of our mortality and the blessedness of a dignified death. 1 year in a large church that was diminishing in numbers, obviously, I had 53 funerals and memorial services. In 1 year, you do the math. But I also joined FEN because of its vision and purpose, and the belief that every person who suffers with an intractable medical condition of any kind should have the option to die legally and peacefully. And we do not at this moment. And FEN's purpose is to educate people on the practical, peaceful ways to end their lives and offer a bedside presence and defend, even legally, and this is important, their right to choose. It's all about choice. You don't need to do it. It's all about choice. So I emphasize, legally and with choice. As you know, in too many places in our society, we are not only denied the choice to do with our bodies, our beings, as we wish, but we are also denied the legal means to do it. In matters of choice about how and when to die, Final Exit Network helps people explore the options. And I simply wish to address today some of the more difficult choices available to people suffering from dementia, particularly from Alzheimer's. But before doing that, let me invite you to visit the table after the service in the atrium to get some more information about Final Exit Network. There are some magazines there. Help yourself. There is also a special document called Advanced Directive. I'm going to talk about this in a minute. Advanced Directive for dementia patients. And there are many copies of that advanced directive, and I invite you to take one. And then finally, there is a pretty much blank sheet, though it says at the top, Final Exit Network. You can put down your email, your name, and your email address, and you will receive an email back from a very nice woman named Melanie Rain. It's perfectly confidential, but it gives you an opportunity to find out more about Final Exit Network if you are interested. So, I want to emphasize two major pieces of FEN. It provides, free of charge to members, legal advice and assistance when your advance directive on how you wish to die is not being honored by medical professionals. And that happens quite often, believe it or not. And it also offers, free of charge, registration of your advance directive with the United States Advanced Care Directory, which means that that information will be available to any doctor, any hospital, anywhere in the United States where you are treated for any kind of condition. See me later if you want to talk more about that. There is also, I told you about Melanie and the sign-up sheet. So, let me talk a little bit about this supplemental advanced directive for dementia care. It is called SAD. It is designed to prevent dying people from being kept alive against their wishes long after dementia has destroyed their cognitive ability or the ability to make personal decisions. And legal support, real legal support, a lawyer, is available, ensuring that the voluntary stopping of eating and drinking, called VSED, you have information on that in your bulletin, is always available to you. It's just an option. You don't need to do it. You need to know, however, that in the United States, it is legal for all of us, you have always had the right, to decline medical treatment that you don't want. Bob just told you of an instance with his mother. She declined that medical treatment that was offered to her. You don't have to have the tubes put in. You don't have to have the chemo. You don't have to have the operation. Likewise, you also have the right to use VSED to end your life whenever you want, and nobody has the right to stop you. The emphasis is on choice. But know from the very beginning that for VSED to work properly, one must avoid liquids. That's the key. As one expert said to me, no sucking on ice cubes. Now let me press the point because it's important. Death comes not from stopping eating. That just prolongs the process. It comes from dehydration. Basic important point, dehydration. Is it uncomfortable or painful? Well, in a sense, probably for a little while. The hard part is the first 2 or 3 days as dehydration dries your lips and your throat. But there are ways to deal with that and still avoid liquids. And particularly if one is in hospice care, and I recommend that wholeheartedly, and with a care nurse or a doctor, the process can and should be quite smooth. And pain can be treated in a variety of ways. If it is severe, it can be with a morphine drip, as it was with my beloved sister. Just know that the vital organs begin to shut down pretty quickly, probably after 2 days or so. This is why, parenthetically, when there is an earthquake or a tornado and people are trapped under debris, it's important to get water to them so that they can survive. Because you can go a long, long time if you've had food in your belly, but you can't go very long if you don't have water. Dr. Jeff Coleman, I talked to Jeff last night for a little while. Jeff was one of the people who was very supportive of Carol in her journey with Alzheimer's. But Jeff is an expert on hospice care, and Jeff is an expert on VSED. And I told him last night that I was going to talk about him in the sermon today, and he said, please do. And so if anybody has information and you don't trust me as the messenger, talk to Jeff. You can trust him. He's a beloved friend and colleague and a wonderful member, a supportive member of this congregation. So I've talked about this directive with the acronym SAD. It takes us into new and revolutionary territory. medical aid in dying, which is for people who are competent and who can get an injection and have their life taken immediately, is not available in the state of Maryland. It is in 12 or 13 other jurisdictions in the country, but not in Maryland. Steve Buckingham can tell you about that and how it is tied up in committee in Annapolis. I'm saddened that we don't have that in Maryland, but we do have VSED. Medical aid in dying and other forms of ending life leave out vast swaths of people. And it particularly leaves out people with dementia, Alzheimer's. You need to know that in the year 2030, over 10 million people in our country will have one form or another of dementia, particularly Alzheimer's. It is a veritable epidemic. And in spite of a lot of excitement these days over a couple of drugs now available that the FDA has approved, they only slow down the progression of the disease. They don't stop it. They don't cure it. There is no cure for Alzheimer's. SAD, as the title indicates, is executed in advance while the person is in the early stages of dementia, but still perfectly competent to mentally give power of attorney to an agent and to specify the use of VSED when it is determined that life no longer has meaning. And so the document declares the choice to die naturally by not eating and drinking at an end point. And it is the person who is still competent who determines what that end point shall be. I don't want to die when I'm totally dependent on other people for knowing what to do and decision making or something like that. So, I authorize my health care surrogate to take any legal action necessary to enforce my choice to die from VSED if I have reached my chosen end point. This is a legal document. It has to be witnessed by two people. It has to be notarized. It needs to be available to medical personnel, certainly to family. And it is good to have family and medical support while doing it, to have people all on the same page. How I wish this directive had been available to me in 2011 when Carol was plummeting into the dark abyss and emptiness of Alzheimer's. She had been diagnosed earlier in about 2007. She knew and I knew what was coming because we had both seen it very vividly already. The year was 1992 in December. It would be our fourth 600-mile trip to Michigan to see her dying mother. Judy was my mother-in-law, was a small, delicate person, very shy. She was being taken care of by my father-in-law. He was a good man, but misguided in terms of what could be done to respond to this looming crisis. On previous visits, he would prop her in a chair and try to feed her, and she'd take a spoonful of food and just hold it in her mouth, sometimes for many, many minutes, 20 minutes or more. And he would yell at her, "Chew your food, Judy, chew your food." And she would just glare at him with eyes filled with painful terror, as if to say, "You fool, can't you see that I don't know how anymore?" But he didn't get it. Judy had five sisters, and they all died of some form of dementia. So Carol knew that the likelihood was great that she too would someday die of Alzheimer's. So this trip was one of foreboding. We drove through a blizzard to get to Sparta, arriving in the middle of the night. Early in the morning, as Carol and I sat in the living room, we heard a thud coming from the bedroom down the hall, and then silence. Then Carol's dad appeared, clearly exhausted and sweating. "She's fallen, Mike, and I can't get her up. I need your help." I went to the bedroom. It smelled of urine and feces. Judy was on the floor with a soiled diaper half off, her nightie half off. She was mostly naked. "I need to get her on the toilet," he said to me. "Mike, can you pick her up?" So I did, and I half pulled and dragged her down the hallway to the bathroom and placed her on the toilet. Her face was filled with horror. "Who is this man violating my body?" "He should rot in hell," she seemed to be saying. A washcloth appeared from somewhere, and I wiped her and tried to clean her up a bit. The sweat was pouring off me, and I looked over in the doorway to see my father-in-law and Carol watching me. Carol's face was red and swollen with tears. She was crying uncontrollably. And I went to her there in the doorway, and she pulled me to her so tightly that it hurt. I could feel her very rib bones. And she said, oh, Mike, please don't ever let this happen to me." I tried as hard as I could, given the restraints upon me. Hospice helped for the last 8 months of her life. And Sea Raven, bless her soul, helped immensely, mostly taking care of me. So Carol's journey was not nearly as horrific as her mother's. But she would have signed this advance directive in a heartbeat. And it should come as no surprise to you that I view this directive as a work of compassion and as a work of love. And copies of it are available on the table in the atrium. I just remind you of that. It may not be for everyone. But know that it presents a choice that seeks to honor the goodness of life and the sweet dignity of death that brings peace from pain and suffering. Amen.